like to call to order the city council meeting, and if you would please rise, we're going to have a moment of silent reflection, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, welcome to the city council meeting, September 12th here. We're going to proceed to 1.4, our roll call. Jean Bain is on vacation and won't be back until later this evening, so we need a motion to excuse Eugene.
Make that motion.
Second.
All right, motion's been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then we move to 1.5, citizen input. Is there anybody here that would like to address an issue that's not on our agenda tonight? Then we're going to move to number 2 on our agenda, approval of the agenda. Is there anybody here that would like to make a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll make the motion.
A second.
And the motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Number 3 on our is our consent agenda. I'm going to talk less. Thank you.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
The move.
Second.
Second. Okay. The motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion is passed. We're down to our current business, number 4. 4.1, public hearing on Freddie Mac Second Avenue rezone. And I would like to now open the public record for the Freddie Mac Second Avenue rezone at 6:33 p.m.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Travis Goddard. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Othello. And before I get to my regular presentation, I wanted to do a quick presentation on the history of the zoning on this site because it's a little quirky. Unfortunately, there is not a great historical record of the zoning maps for the City of Othello, and I've gone through several of the drawers in my office and the piles of maps that are in the vault. And so this was what I was able to piece together. This is the 1965 zoning map, and the properties that we are talking about are on Scutney and Second Avenue. In this case, in this, you can see Second Avenue to the top, and this is Scutney Street, and it is not platted at that time on this map, but gives you an idea of the zoning. And the zonings are down at the bottom. They're not the greatest quality. I apologize for that. But the property in question is zoned commercial 1, and there's actually 3 parcels. I'll get to that in a minute. This is the 1964. Sorry, it looks like I have them out of order for some reason. So this is showing Scutney Street where it comes in. Second Avenue, again, is in this location, and it has zoning as either C1 or R2, depending on which parcels we're talking about. By 1994, it looks like at some point there was a zoning map adopted that showed it as R2, but there's no official ordinance adopting that map that I can find. 1995, again, this was in the file and it was identified as Ordinance 976, adopted December 21, 1995, and it shows the properties as Commercial 1. So just a year later, it looks like the map had changed. And then this was the most recent one that we had adopted, and it was the Varela and Associates version of the Gray and Osborne map that we've been using for several years. Unfortunately, the Gray and Osborne maps were not dated, so I couldn't tell exactly when they had been adopted or which version of the map was the most accurate. But I can tell you that the current map that we have adopted shows this intersection. If you're familiar with this house, it's a little red house with a barber shop in the back, off the back porch. And these four are all residential uses. And so that's kind of just the background of the confusing zoning stuff that's there. So my presentation today is about these three properties here. Now, Freddie Mac is a lending organization that owns the property at 848 during the 2008 housing crisis. It went back to Freddie Mac as a foreclosure, and it has been in various legal statuses, but they finally listed it on the market for sale, and a purchaser was going through a Moses Lake realtor, and they made an offer. It was accepted by Freddie Mac, but they, when they went to get financing, I was asked to do a zoning letter, and I indicated that it was zoned Commercial 1, and in the Commercial 1 zone, you cannot replace a residence unless there's a primary commercial use. So when I took it to the Planning Commission to discuss the zone change request from C1 to Residential 2, the Planning Commission recognized that these two houses across the street were also zoned commercial, but they are residential, and all three of these houses were built in the mid-1950s. They have been residential and always have been residential, but they were zoned commercial at various points throughout their life without knowing it. And so the Planning Commission recommended that all three of these properties be zoned residential. I told them at that time that I could not include those two houses because we didn't do legal public notice for a public hearing. Therefore, we couldn't expand beyond what had been requested. So again, here's the properties that we're talking about. We're talking about this one. That's the Freddie Mac request. Then there are these two properties, which are single-family residential. So the reason why I'm pointing this out is this is actually the map from the public notice that we did for tonight's hearing. So should you want to change the zoning for all three of these properties in accordance with the Planning Commission recommendation, I've done the work necessary to track down the property owners, and they both indicated, yes, we thought this had been fixed in 1994. We didn't realize that we were still commercial after all this time, and they would like residential zoning. So before you today, you may rezone all three of those because I have applications signed by the property owners, and we've provided legal public notice for the zone change. So the difference between the zones is Commercial 1 is our retail section, or our retail zoning, and it talks about banks, retail stores, gas stations, offices, motels, hotels. The residential zone is essentially single family or duplex with the occasional home occupation would be permitted in them. So to do a zone change, there's essentially three criteria in the zoning code. That is, it must be in the public's interest, it must benefit the public welfare of the community, and it must be consistent with the city's zoning scheme. So my analysis of those, also the other thing, that now that we've revised our comprehensive plan, I just wanted to throw in there that the plan with the comprehensive plan was eventually to go from the commercial structure we have now to be kind of small scale neighborhood commercial to serve everybody within walking distance. The community commercial would be larger commercial properties that serve generally the entire community, whereas general commercial tends to be the stuff around the highways where we'll draw people in off of the highways for commercial activity as well as the local community. So that's the plan for the new comprehensive plan. Now, from my staff analysis, is this site, these three small sites, they essentially implement the vision of a neighborhood commercial. They're small, they're inconspicuous. The fact that they're not being used as commercial, it's a little problematic, but if they wanted to do commercial, they could. Existing use is residential, and the size limits the ability of the site to redevelop. So if they did burn down, they can't replace it with a residence, but they could build commercial. They would just have inadequate parking, inadequate size, but they would be allowed to do it. The public interest question is, the public interest would be served in this case by not encouraging commercial through traffic down Second Avenue. It is relatively small and it doesn't necessarily lead anywhere, so it doesn't facilitate great traffic coordination. The residential is consistent with the welfare of the community, especially the rest of Second Avenue, which has been residential since the 1950s and the original houses were built. And the zoning scheme of the city is not significantly affected by this change, simply because each of these lots is so small that you're unlikely to have any significant commercial development on them. So it's not a significant loss or prevention of the city's zoning scheme. So the staff recommendation is, the Planning Commission recommendation in this case, and that is they recommended going to the residential 2 as requested by the property owner. And as I mentioned, they suggested that house number 831 and 847 be rezoned at the same time. That way we won't have to come back here and do this again. Are there any questions?
I've got one question. The barbershop is zoned how? Is it commercial?
So the barbershop is zoned commercial, okay. And actually it is the only lot that is actually currently implementing the commercial zone.
So if we were to pass the R2, mm-hmm. You'd have to go out of business?
No. So this property right here, south of 847, this is actually the little barbershop, and okay. It would remain commercial. This lot here is also zoned commercial, but our commercial code has a quirk, and it says you cannot build residential unless you front on Cedar Street or Hemlock Street or Scutney Street. So both of these lots are zoned commercial, but technically if their houses burn down, they could rebuild them, because they front on one of those magic streets that warrant commercial residential development.
Hope we don't have too many magical streets.
Yeah.
Does council have any more questions?
I would like to, as long as we're doing it, R2, I'd like to see all three lots.
That's what he's asking
that's my opinion.
And any other questions? Okay. At this time, we can open to public testimony, and we'll allow 5 minutes per person. So the first we'd like to call for is those. Is there anybody in support of the
zone change from C1 to R2?
No. Anybody neutral to the proposal that would like to speak? And anybody in opposition of the proposal that would like to speak?
I'd just like to ask.
Please.
Could you step to the podium and state your name and address for the record?
My name is Maricela Laureano, and my address is 801 South 2nd. I missed the first part of this meeting, but I just would like to know if it affects my property with the outcome of this decision that you guys are about to make. I live near these properties that you guys are discussing now.
No, I don't believe, I think the commercial only covers up to 848 and 831, is that correct?
Right, but does this affect the non-properties you guys are talking about right now? No. Okay, that was my only concern that I wanted to...
I believe the rest of the residences are zoned R2 already, so it's just these that we're looking at changing from commercial to R2.
Just wanted to know, thank you.
So yours should be R2.
Thank you.
All right, does, well, we didn't have anybody, well, does, would, we had the staff respond, so we're good. At this time, we'll close the public testimony at, what is it, 6:45? And the council members at this time, do you have any other questions?
No.
Okay, then...
You need to hear somebody make a motion.
Do we need to go to agenda 4.2, the ordinance? So we'll move to that, and do we need to make a motion?
Yes. So I will move to adopt the ordinance amending the city zoning map.
A second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. All right.
That was for all three addresses, correct?
I'm sorry?
That's all three addresses.
That's all three addresses. All right, we're on agenda number 4.3, special event policy.
Good evening. What I brought for you tonight is a policy that was actually written in 2014. It is a policy that supports a process that we've been using since 2014 for special events in the park. That pertains to any gathering in one of our city parks over 149 people. So some examples of those that I've come to you with this year have been a couple of church functions, the 4th of July, the car show, and things like that. We also had a wedding, so it was like a smaller private event. We've been using the process with the special event application where the Parks and Rec person sits down and goes through about 6 pages of questions of what the intent is, what the celebration is going to be like, what's it going to include, what services will be needed from Public Works, and so on and so forth. And from there ensues the planning and the contract writing and the coming to council and getting approval. This year, we stumbled across sharing the document with somebody up at City Hall, and she recognized that there was a policy cited on the front page. And when she went and looked up that policy, it turns out that that policy had something to do with public records, and there was never an actual policy formally adopted for this process that we've been using. While it was being developed, it made it all the way to a workshop meeting where council sent Molly Kistler to have it reviewed by legal counsel and risk pool. So that would be Tanya Kreitz from WCIA. And at the time, we had a different counsel, so they were able to look over that. But I've since consulted with Kelly, and what I presented to you is the updated. There were 2 small changes that he made. One was striking some verbiage saying in which the city services are required to ensure the safety and coordination of the event, because we cannot really ensure the safety of said things. And another line that cites the city's requirements to obtain insurance for the event. So I guess at this point, I'm just hoping that we can adopt the policy that we've been pretty much following, but just to make it official. The policy is important to help back the process that we've currently been using. If there ever was a question or an issue, we could always call in the policy to back up.
Great, thank you, Amy. Does council have any questions?
No.
All right, then we need a form a motion, council, to carry a motion to adopt the special event policy.
Make that motion.
Okay.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Council has passed the motion. I am nervous. Sorry, guys.
Doing this.
Just calm down and go slow.
My first time. All right. So we're on agenda number 4.4, Main Street and Broadway Avenue Traffic Study. And this is an informational... Travis.
How did you get on? That's fine. So this is just bringing some information back to you. Several months ago, there was a discussion about a zone change, or I'm sorry, there was a speed change on Broadway Avenue that was done as part of several speed changes at the same time. And an issue, a question about safety was raised at that time, or the need for a study was raised at that time, and you authorized me to go work with a consultant to get that work done. And this is the report that has come out of that work. They sent it to me, and they have some minor spelling checks to do, but essentially this is the final project, or the final product. So I wanted to give you some feedback on it before it gets finalized. The report concludes that essentially the data they collected on the traffic counts and the speed essentially reinforces what the city concluded, and that was with an average travel speed of about 33 miles per hour, that 35 for the 85th percentile. That means 85% of the traffic going through that intersection is going at the speed of 33 miles per hour. So using the traffic control manual, the recommended speed for that stretch of Broadway would be 35 miles per hour. And so it essentially agreed with the data that we use to do the zone change, or the speed change in the first place. It recommended, however, that we wait a year or 2 years to do another review of the accident study. So if you look in the staff report, I believe it's on page 5. Spencer, can you take us to page 8 of the staff report? And it talks about the accident data. So there are just a little more than a million trips a year going through that intersection. And the number of trips for, scroll down to page 8. So it should be table 5. So it talks about the average numbers of trips and how what triggers a need for a traffic study. So the 3-year historical data is presented in this staff report, or in this report, and what it says is, this last column, the FAT, if you could go up just a bit. Okay. So the last column is the fatalities column, and the one next to that is injuries, and then the third column is property damage. So it tells us where the accidents caused car damage or vehicle damage, injury damage, or fatalities. There were three intersections, or three injury accidents at First Street. There was one at Hemlock Street, but there were none at Main, none at the various driveways north and south of Main Street. So they were pretty thorough, and they determined that at this point there was no accident data that warranted improvements to this intersection or a decrease in the speed at this intersection due to the traffic issues. One of the things that they did note, and that was during this section from, I believe it's Juniper to Fir, there are a lot of driveways, and the driveways are of sufficient size that they're causing turning movements, people turning out of one could interfere with other people turning into other driveways.
So that's true, left turns, right turns, and crosses at Hemlock and Fir. So they recommended that if we have an opportunity, that we should look for joint driveways or to minimize driveway spacing, or, sorry, maximum driveway spacing with new developments. And then their last suggestion was that we could create a special zone there and put it on a road diet. So in other words, if we take away the travel lanes, currently there's two in each direction with a center turn lane, the amount of traffic going through that intersection, we could add parking on both sides and condense it down to a single lane in each direction. And just that would have a traffic calming effect, and it would allow us to slow traffic down by narrowing the road. But they said that would be options, that it's not required by the data, but it is another thing that we could pursue if we wanted to. And that's essentially it. There's no foregone conclusions or recommendations in the report other than we wait a couple years and see if there's any change in the collision data.
Thank you. Does staff have, or staff, does the council have any questions at this time?
Do you know how many accidents have happened since it's been changed to 35?
So the answer to that is none. There have been none since we changed it. But it's a relatively short period.
There's been one at Main and Broadway, a semi and a car just recently. Oh. Still with paint marks on the road.
Oh, so it may have come in after this report was done? Yeah. Okay. I was not aware of that.
Any other questions? Ken, I saw you raise your hand. Would you like to come up and say something?
Yes.
Hi. Ken Johnson, 1020 Cobblestone. Got a business there at 20 South Broadway, right on the corner. Yeah, there has been one serious accident since then. It was a semi-verse car. The car was headed south, turned in front of the semi. Semi was headed north. I read through this report too, and yeah, it is concluded that the street can handle 35 mile an hour speed limit, but it cannot handle it safely, and that's my concern with it. The report does make several comments about safety on here about it. There's been 15 accidents on that street in a 3-year period from Juniper to Fir. 8 of those alone are at the intersection of Main and Broadway. It states here, city officials may want to monitor conditions to assure these intersections do not involve into high accident locations, as the data warrants some concern. This data was collected, the speed limit was at 25 miles an hour. Basically, they want you to research it in a couple of years at 35 miles an hour now, that we've increased, I think, the hazard of that to research it. So in the meantime, they're looking at, it states here that the severity of these collision types can increase with the speed statistically. So you're looking at a more severe accident now at 35 miles an hour in those intersections. Another conclusion, the Broadway Avenue intersection with Main Street and First Street experience ICR rates that exceed one collision per million, entering vehicles with collision type substantial to higher severity with increased speeds. That's mentioned several times here in this report, increased severity with increased speeds. And I think that's what we're going to start to see, is these accidents where we had the injury rate was fairly low is going to also substantially increase now that we've increased this 35 mile an hour speed limit. And I've seen this already happen. We had it at 25, they were doing 35. That's what the 85th percentile already proved, and that's why it was going there. I see cars going through there now constantly. You give them 35, they're doing 45. They're doing 40, 45 through there constantly. I've already made my calls to the police department and talked to Phil Shank, the police chief, about it. You could sit there in the morning, and especially this time of year with harvest going on, you could hear the trucks starting to grab the gears when they're trying to beat that light going through that intersection. And I've seen many, many close calls through that intersection. And that's just my concern, is the speed still through that intersection.
Do we know if most of these accidents, have they been just with cars or semi and a car? Do we have any statistics on that?
I have no idea on that. I can just tell you the last one that was there was about 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, was semi-car.
Because if anything, I mean, I've driven a truck for many years. I have over 1 million miles under my belt.
Yeah.
And I ran into, you know, into McCain's and Simplot for many years with Carnation, when it was Carnation. And Broadway being 35 miles an hour, you know, you do tend to, you know, take, you know, you get it up to 40. And if yeah. any, if anything, if we change any speeds, and we and if we really want more safety in that intersection, you know, especially you just mentioned harvest. When you're doing 35-40 on a semi and you're loaded, and that light turns yellow, let me tell you, you're going to run it.
You're going to run it. Yes.
You're going to run it. So if anything, you know, I'd rather have Broadway on a 25 because a better chance of stopping. You know, if you're doing 35-40, and most drivers, you know, 80-90% of them will not stop because they're not going to stop the vehicle. Just imagine us in a car. If we hit a yellow light, most of the time, I mean, you're not knowing what to do. You know what I mean? A truck is going to go for it because he's not going to stop where he should stop.
And I see that constantly, yeah.
Yeah.
I do see that all the time, yeah. Thank you, guys, for your time.
Thank you.
Nothing needed, just an informational.
All right. Well, thank you, Ken. We're moving to agenda 4.5, McCain Food Water Contract. Spencer.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. As soon as I bring up the agenda memo, it's taking a little bit for them to actually come up on the screens. It'll appear here in just a sec. Tonight for your consideration is a contract amendment, the second amendment to a contract that is between the city and McCain Foods for water. We have a contract with them that started back in 2003. It'll scroll up here in just a sec, too. Back in 2003, there was an agreement between the city and McCain's. There was a 20-year agreement, and there are a series of amendments that have taken place over the life of this agreement. We have our first contract amendment that expires this month, this year, September 15th, here in a couple of days. And we have a new contract in place that'll carry us through the remaining 7 years of this agreement with McCain's for water services. When we look at the water hookups that McCain has for water, they have They currently have eight hookups for water, and the majority of those, all but two of them, are just at the regular city rate, whatever the rate is per ordinance for the size of pipe and the volume of water going through the pipe. So tonight we just need to look at two other lines. These are the two 10-inch lines. One is the fire suppression line, and one is the standby for the 10-inch line. Standby water for production. We met with the finance committee to discuss the new contract, and we had some back and forth with McCain, and we eventually made sure all the T's were crossed and the I's were dotted with our attorney before we brought this to you tonight for your consideration. With our fire suppression meter, that's the first one up here. McCain Foods is requesting to pay $1,000 a month for this line. For city ordinance, we charge $1 per diameter inch, which would be $10 a month. But McCain's is thinking of their debt to service, kind of like a latecomers agreement. There is no latecomers fee established for this water line. But per the discussions that occurred back in 2003, McCain at that time wanted to pay $3,000 a month for 3 years, increasing with the CPI, pay that rate for 3 years. After that, it would drop down to $2,000 from 2006 to today, also increasing with CPI. And then now they want to drop it down to $1,000 and include some verbiage in the contract to the effect of their debt to service has been satisfied by this additional payment that they're making instead of just paying the $10 a month. So that's the first one. Then the second one is the ten inch standby line for production. What the agreement previously read was $10,000 a year, which is $833 a month, and for our code we can charge $2,618 a month when that line is used. And in the last couple of years, it's been used maybe just a couple of times a year. What McCain proposed instead was just a flat $1,000 a month for the 12 months of the life of the contract. So that ends up being likely a little bit more money for the city. It's really easy for us just to plug the $1,000 in and let it run for the year instead of having to track was there water used this month. Then let's charge the $2,618 and know the next month, so let's not charge $2,618. So we met with the committee, and the two underlined options there are what we wanted to go with. If there are any members of the committee that wanted to make a couple of statements, feel welcome, or I can field any other questions that you have.
I just will say it's a very generous offer by McCain's. I mean, we were fine with the $10 a month. They want to pay $1,000 a month for the fire suppression line and for the life of the contract, and you know, $1,000 a month for the water line, and that guarantees them that, you know, they can use that line anytime. I think it's a very generous offer and an agreement.
Is that a seven-year contract?
Seven-year, yeah. 2023.
Would September. You like a motion?
So, yeah, at this time, it's the recommendation of staff and council that we approve this contract.
And I won't vote.
Right.
I'll abstain.
I'll make the motion. Seven-year, $1,000 a month, whether they use the line or not.
Okay. And then,
Ultimately, those are both included in the contract,
yeah.
So we just need to approve the contract as presented.
Just the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Accept the contract.
I'll accept the contract.
Second.
Of course.
I'll second.
Be good.
Yeah. All right. Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And that passes.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're down to unfinished business. Does anybody have any unfinished business tonight?
I would like to ask again how we're coming on this Red Barn as far as the home of the Huskies. Or am I just, I shouldn't be bringing it up?
I haven't been able to get a hold of them yet.
So if we just go ahead and get somebody in town to write it, you'll probably be able to get a hold of you. Okay.
He's not kidding. He's not kidding.
That's awesome.
It's the way things used to be done around here.
All right, we're down to number six on our agenda, new business. Does anybody have any new business? All right, seeing there's no new business, I believe that concludes our city council meeting for September 12th at, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, this lady would like to come up and speak. Did we miss her at the beginning of the?
No, just, I have a question. My name is Flavia Laureano, and I live in the 819 South 2nd Avenue. Mm-hmm. And just my concern is because 2 years ago, I think it's past 2 years ago, we received a letter, and they said raise the taxes, and they fix our street, and our street is still, we're not working on that. So Jess is asking how many more months we need to wait, or how many more years we need to wait for working on our street and the 2nd Avenue, South 2nd Avenue. Wait. Yeah, because the taxes were raised, but our street is in very bad conditions. You can see, you can go and see. And also back to the, he's talking about the different, the accident that we have in our streets. And my concern is also, I don't know if this works on the first street and the 26 and the highway 26. Mm-hmm. For the new different, we see that I can see a lot of accidents in that street, the first and the 20 and the high 26. And the last accident, I guess it was like 1 month and a half, I guess, so now we have a fatality person died in that accident. So, and I think so we need to think and to put some lights there or something that is taking more attention for the people to stop. And this is my concern here also. So,
Thank you. Does staff have any response?
Just to her last point, I'll let Spencer address the first one. As you all know, that's a state highway. Mm-hmm. On Highway 26, and as we know, they designed an intersection. I'm answering your last question about 26 and first. The state designed it, and that's a state highway. We cannot put a traffic light on there without state approval. We tried to do something different, my understanding, before I got here, and that's the way they designed it, which, as we all know, is not very good, but that's what we're trying to live with. As we move forward with the state on some other issues along 26, we'll address that as well. You'll get no disagreement from anybody in this room, okay?
No.
But I guess that my understanding is we battled with the state on that and lost, so maybe we'll do battle with them again sometime in the future. Yeah. The only thing, and Travis can correct me, is that we'll keep track of them like we did this traffic study. And when traffic studies show that we need to do something different, and when that'll be, I don't know. We could do it again and then maybe convince the state to do something different there. A traffic light would be, I think, in everybody's opinion, the best thing. Based on the way that thing's designed and the come over the overpass and everything else, it's just not good. So that's the only thing we can do probably in the next couple of years as we complete some improvements to first. So can't promise you anything except we're going to try our best to beat up the state and make them change it.
Hey, Wade, can I interrupt for a little bit?
Sure.
Sí, le entendió lo que dijo, ¿verdad? Cuando el Estado, cuando se trata del Estado y la ciudad, el Estado tiene que tener parte.
And then Spencer can address your first question about the tax.
I can speak to the extra tax for the streets. About 2 years ago, the city passed the TBD, Transportation Benefit District, and the purpose of that district is to help fund street improvements. At that time, there was no tax that was imposed, or the tax was put out to vote and it failed. And just this year in, was it May?
April.
I think it was just April this year. It was put out to vote again, and the citizens approved a 0.2% sales tax that would be collected. All that money would be collected in the TBD fund and only used on street projects. The first revenue, or that increased sales tax is going to go in effect October 1st, so next month. And so businesses will start collecting. That's when the tax rate and the sales tax rate here in the city of Othello will change from
7.7 to 7.9 for that other little piece. And the businesses will collect that in October. In November, that's when they do their reporting up to the Department of Revenue. And then in December, the city will get the first allotment of funds from those sales taxes. And then every month after that, that's just the timetable. So starting in December, we should get, it was an estimated $22,000, $25,000 a month from there on out. And those monies are called, it'll be called, it's a restricted revenue. They can only be used for street projects. And once we have that money, we can use it as matching, as leverage to get maybe state grants. So we can get a $1 million state grant, and that's our $200,000 local match. But that's kind of the timeline of the TBD and that other 0.2%. So did that answer the question?
I haven't actually started collecting the money yet. The money is going to come soon, and then the collection will start.
Si tiene preguntas de eso de lo que está hablando de las taxas, si quiere hablar conmigo después de la junta, yo puedo darle más información de cuando la última vez que subimos las taxas para los caminos fue reciente, fue hace como 2 o 3 meses. Ese dinero se va a estar usando para el futuro. ¿Me entiende? Y se van a usar nomás para los caminos secundarios, si podemos decir, para hacerlos mejor. Pero nunca hemos subido taxes. Yo no creo. We've never raised the tax for secondary streets, right? Yeah. Y esa carta, porque apenas aceptamos ese 2% que subieron las taxes, ¿verdad? Sobre ese dinero, como dijo Spencer, ese dinero ya se recibió la primer, what was it, the first quarter that we received?
Oh, it'll start, the tax will be collected in October.
In October.
So people start paying.
Las primeras taxes se van a estar recibiendo en octubre. So de octubre en adelante, como vamos recibiendo ese dinero, entonces vamos a ver qué caminos vamos a componer. Pero no le dijimos al público dónde íbamos a empezar, pero... Is that what we did? We were supposed to name no streets. Any streets, anyway.
I don't.
All right.
Yeah.
What's that?
On the information flyer by the
National Utility Bill on the left-hand side. Yeah. I think probably what it stated was some of the streets that are in disrepair that need to be fixed, and those monies are going to go to that as soon as we start, you know, collecting them, and that's what the plan is.
Spencer, what are we going to be collecting an average a year, more or less? Is it 500,000?
No, about half that, about 250,000.
So, se van a, con ese porcentaje de taxas que se subió, se va a colectar más o menos como $250,000 por año. Okay. Si el Estado nos, como digo en español, nos mechea, entonces tenemos $500,000 para empezar con los caminos. So no sabemos a cuál camino vamos a empezar primero. La cosa que tenemos que hacer primero es colectar el dinero y a ver a cuál camino vamos a hacer primero. Pero sí, ese es el plan de trabajar en esos caminos secundarios que se mencionan que tienen marcados ahí. ¿Me entendió?
And let me add one more thing, just so you understand that, you know, it costs more than just, we can't just repave the street. State and federal regulations say that when we touch a street and redo it, we also have to bring the curbs and sidewalks and gutters, everything else up to state regulations. That drives the cost up significantly. So while if we could just, you know, grind and overlay and pave the streets, we could get a lot of them done. But since we have to do all the other stuff, it costs, I don't know, Terry, is almost double the amount, significantly more to do that. So that's why it's going to take some doing to get all the streets done. I agree with you. I've been down south 2nd on more than one occasion, I know what you're talking about. Pine Street's the same way, there's several that really need, even the street I live on the other side of town, is in need of repair. So we've got a lot to do, and unfortunately not a lot of funds to do it with, so we're going to do our best.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? All right, so that concludes our council meeting tonight, and we're going to close the council meeting at 7:25, 7:20, sorry.